Hello and welcome to this news event sponsored by Piper Wolf Carr and Kane Law Firm, or Piper Wolf for short. You'll be hearing from five speakers today. Before we introduce them, I want to ask the operator to come on to explain how the Q&A period will work.
During the question and answer session, you may ask a question by pressing star then one on your touchtone phone. If you would like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press star then two. Again, it's star then one to ask a question.
Thank you. And we'll repeat those instructions about how members of the media can pose questions at the start of the Q&A period. So as I mentioned, you'll be hearing from five speakers today. First, Joseph Piper, Managing Partner, Piper Wolf. Second, Hunter Winkowski, owner of Hunter Tree Farms in O'Fallon, Missouri. Third, Joe McLemore, owner of McLemore Farms near Marion, Arkansas. Fourth, Marty Harper, farmer near Greenville, North Carolina. And fifth, Paul Lesko, attorney, Piper Wolf. Let's go to our first speaker, Joseph Piper, managing partner, Piper Wolf. Go ahead, Joe.
Good morning. I want to welcome you to this news event organized by Piper Wolf Carr and Kane, or Piper Wolf for short. My name is Joe Piper, and I'm the managing shareholder of Piper Wolf. It has now been about 10 days since the $265 million verdict handed down by a Missouri jury in the Bader lawsuit involving the controversial herbicide dicamba from Monsanto, Bayer, and BASF. We are here today to answer the question, what happens next? And who better to help us answer that than the actual farmers from across America who've been damaged by dicamba? You'll hear shortly from a soybean farmer in Arkansas, a tree farmer in Missouri, and a tobacco farmer in North Carolina. Their voices need to be heard because, in the end, this is really about farmers, their families, and their fight for justice. Piper Wolf currently represents dozens of farmers with dicamba damage, and that number has increased in the days since the Bader verdict. We believe that more than 2,000 U.S. farmers are likely to file suits seeking justice for the damage inflicted by dicamba on their crops. We have not made that estimate public before today, and we are doing so here for the first time. As you may know, counsel for Monsanto, Bayer, after losing the Bader case, said that the verdict was not going to be repeated because the circumstances of the Bader case were unique. Well, we are here today to tell you that that is wrong. In fact, we now have the roadmap to get justice for dicamba victims. The jury in Missouri sent a clear signal that you can't profit off of hurting innocent farmers and get away with it. Monsanto, Bayer, and BASF understandably want to calm down shareholders in the markets by pretending that there aren't more than 2,000 farmers out there with dicamba damage. The crop damage research and increasing farmer complaints forecast a much bigger problem than Monsanto, Bayer, and BASF want to admit. At some point, Monsanto and BASF need to stop killing farmers and their livelihood. But that's me, talking as a lawyer. Today, in this news event, you can hear from Hunter Winkowski in Missouri, a sixth-generation farmer with family roots going back to 1885. You can hear from Joe McLemore, the owner of a 1,000-acre farm. He's been working the land for 30 years and wants to hand the family farm to his son. And we also have today Marty Harper from North Carolina. His tobacco farm has been in his family for generations. There are hundreds and even thousands of farmers out there like the three you will hear from today. Their message is clear. Farming is a tough enough business to survive in without a giant chemical company poisoning you and your crops. Monsanto, Bayer, and BASF are whistling past the graveyard if they think their problems with dicamba claims began and ended with the Bader case. We have the roadmap. We know how to read it and get to where it will take us, and that is justice for farmers and their families. We're going to make sure that farmers you hear from today and many, many more get the justice they are entitled to. That concludes my opening statement. I look forward to taking your questions.
Thanks again. That was Joseph Piper, managing partner, Piper Wolf. Let's proceed to our second speaker, Hunter Winkowski, owner of Hunter Tree Farms in O'Fallon, Missouri. Hunter?
Hi, this is Hunter with Hunter Tree Farms located in O'Fallon, Missouri. I'd like to say that my family has been farming since 1885 in Crivitz, Wisconsin. I am a sixth-generation farmer. Row crop farming is a tradition in my family. And however, I started working at a tree nursery, which got me interested in beginning that tradition here with my own family. The impact of dicamba really hurt our business, considering we are in our infancy. not yet out of our five-year startup model, so we are still dealing with the debt associated with starting a farm. Because of dicamba damage, our company could not sell any trees in 2018 or 19. The trees we had always planned on making trees available to the public. We started with 1,875 trees a year and should have had well over 3,000 viable trees from 2016 and 17. Yet at this point, we only have around 350 trees from those years, and maybe only 100 of those trees are marketable. The trees we have are now stunted and not what the trees should be as a result of the dicamba damage. Also, some of the species we had planted in 2016 and 17 were decimated. We only have three of those out of the seven species we started with. Once dicamba hit us, we needed to change our business model because we couldn't target our original buyers. Our trees are not cheap. The grade of trees is determined by how well the tree grows and how it looks. The difference in profit from grade A versus grade B could be $80 versus $180. As a result of the dicamba, our original business model had to change from selling to municipalities and towards landscapers. They are vastly different markets. When dicamba hit the trees, it either kills them or makes them look terrible. In our business, how our trees look affects our bottom line. We cannot sell ugly trees. Not only will no one buy them, but it would be embarrassing to launch our company with damaged trees. Our tree farm uses a very complex mixture of high-end ingredients in order to grow the best quality trees. The grow media we use is very expensive, which means that we have lost even more than just our profit or yield, but also much of our investment. This whole process has been disheartening. Monsanto and BASF not just hurt our business. They need to be held accountable so we can protect others. They need to pay for what they did. To me, farming is a sense of freedom. This business is something that I want to pass on to my family. Everything I do is for the next generation. It's a foundation upon which I can teach my children about the inner workings of life. The topic of trees can resonate with anyone. It would tickle me pink to be able to get old and watch my grandsons do the same thing as I did, growing trees. But we need to sell trees this year, and getting this process going for two to three years, we're building a vision out at the farm for a grand opening, and they took that away from us. So, without saying any more, that's a shorthand of introducing myself. So, thank you for the time, and I pass on my time. So, thank you.
Thank you, Hunter. Again, that was Hunter Winkowski, owner of Hunter Tree Farms in O'Fallon, Missouri. Let's go to our third speaker, Joe McLemore, owner of McLemore Farms near Marion, Arkansas. Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you. I've been in agriculture for 30 years now and started off as a catfish farmer for the first 20. I'm a first-generation farmer with a son who's trying to farm. Legally, where I am, I cannot spray dicamba, and I'm not going to spray it when it's evident it's going to damage others. The introduction of dicamba into the marketplace has been a nightmare for us. The ordeals caused me to live with increased anxiety. We always have a lot of factors that determine how well we are going to do. This is another thing that we have no control over, which has made for a lot of sleepless nights. For this damage to continue happening year over year, it's just very frustrating. It's hard enough to make a living as a farmer, and this just makes everything harder. I don't ever get a chance to relax when the entire year the crop is stressed from this, and there's no way of anticipating the fields that were hit or how much chemical they were hit with. So, I could have lost by some estimates close to 50% of yield, and that's just a potential estimate, though, because we've been hit so many times with who knows what dosage. And dicamba is the exact same chemical with the exact same volatilization, regardless of where it hits. It's a chemical that cannot be controlled. You know, who knows what happens in their research labs, but it's clear that it moves and kills crops. I can't emphasize enough how discouraged I am by the lack of moral fortitude that Monsanto has shown toward us. You know, I'm devastated that they would treat me, their customer, like that when all I've ever done is give them big checks for their products. You know, in my son, I have a young man I'm trying to teach to do the right thing. And Monsanto and BASF are making it very hard for us. I always wanted to run my own farm when I was younger, but I never could afford to until I was about 40. You know, if I can help my son get started, it will be my legacy to him. I want to help my son do well, and we're trying to become a farm family, and things like this certainly don't make it any easier. Thank you.
Thanks again. That was Joe McLemore, owner of McLemore Farms near Marion, Arkansas. Let's go to our fourth speaker, Marty Harper, farmer near Greenville, North Carolina. Marty?
Yes, I'm Marty Harper, M.W. Harper Farming. I farm between North Carolina between Raleigh and the coast. I'm about 45 miles south of Greenville, North Carolina. We grow peanuts, cotton, corn, soybeans, wheat, sweet potatoes. But I'm a fourth-generation tobacco farmer, and we make most of our profit from food-cured tobacco. We grow almost 4,000 acres of crops now, but still, with all that, most of my profit comes from food-cured tobacco. And all the other crops are mostly for profit, but mostly for rotation also. We have been lifelong customers of Monsanto and BASF. Majority of our seed for cotton, soybeans, and corn are Monsanto products, and they are by far the best. You know, they have very good seed, no doubt about that. But we were unable to use anything. We use a lot of chemicals from Bayer and Monsanto, but we don't use any chemical that have dicamba technology in them. And we're just unable to use that because of the potential drift and damage of crops of not only my own, but my neighbors also. Tobacco is a unique crop compared to these other crops because we're not selling the seed, we're selling the leaf. And as in with cotton, soybeans, and corn, you're harvesting the seed. And with tobacco, it's the leaf, and tobacco is extremely sensitive to dicamba. And it exhibits the damage from dicamba very quickly. And in fact, the more the plant grows, the more damage that it exhibits. And it's real easy to see it, you know, once you walk into the field. And tobacco is considered by the Food and Drug Administration as a food crop. So we're under all the rules and regulations any food crop, vegetable or fruit crop would come under. And no tobacco company will purchase any tobacco that shows sign of chemical damage, especially by dicamba since it exhibits it so strongly. I found out that the Missouri case, there were peach trees involved, and I didn't realize, you know, most of the crops I heard that was damaged by dicamba, I thought were soybeans, and we did have some peanuts damaged too also, but you know, obviously, you know, these are food crops, and once they get damaged, you cannot sell them. And I've been farming my whole life. I've graduated from NC State two-year agricultural institute. I have two sons, both who are farming with me. And dicamba is, you know, is throwing a wrench in everything. And like I said, since our crops are so sensitive to it, you know, it makes us nervous every year. I just hope all this works out and hopefully, you know, we can continue farming. You know, farming's been different the last several years, and we don't need something like dicamba drift to further speed up, you know, if we can farm or not, determine whether we farm in the future or not. Marty Harper, North Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty. Again, that was Marty Harper, farming near Greenville, North Carolina. Let's go to our fifth and final speaker, Paul Lesko, attorney, Piper Wolf. Go ahead, Paul.
Good morning. As you heard, my name is Paul Lesko, and I am an attorney with Piper, Wolf, Carr & Kane. In addition to being a lawyer, I also have a background in biochemistry, which a somewhat which is a somewhat unique combination, a lawyer that knows science. I got my law degree from Tulane, and I have degrees with honors in biology and biochemistry from the University of Illinois. My background has proven to be extremely helpful in dealing with all of the dicamba claims that are now piling up. In fact, I have been actively involved in parsing through the science in both the recently concluded Bader case and in much of the other dicamba-related litigation going on today. Based on what I know, there is no scientific basis for the statements by attorneys for Monsanto and Bayer that the Bader case that resulted in the $265 million verdict is unique and therefore a one-off situation for Bayer and BASF. In fact, the science is well established about how dicamba is volatile and how it drifts. We know based on the science that dicamba is extremely damaging to other crops. The science also tells us that dicamba will kill everything except grass crops. There are very few scientific question marks when it comes to dicamba. It is powerful, and it causes real damage to other crops. And that is why thousands of farmers have real and viable claims today. You don't hear stories like those told to us by the three farmers today if they are not backed up by hard science. And when it comes to the harm done by dicamba, the science is very clear. That concludes my opening statement. I look forward to taking your questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Again, that was Paul Lesko, attorney, Piper Wolf. And that takes us to the Q&A period of the call. And as a reminder, the Q&A portion is for members of the media only. Before we begin, I'd like to get the operator back on the line to explain once again how members of the media can queue up to ask a question. Operator?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star then two to remove yourself from the list. Please limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star one to rejoin the queue.
Thank you. And while we're waiting for our first question, I want to make sure you know that an audio recording of this news event will be available online later today at dicambadrift.com. And if you need to connect with any of the speakers you're hearing from following the call, just contact Max Carlin at 703-276-3255. Again, 703-276-3255. Okay, operator, let's go to our first question, please.
The first question is from Tom Polansek of Reuters. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. My question is for Joe Pfeiffer. Joe, you said that you believe more than 2,000 farmers are likely to file suit over dicamba damage. Can you explain how you came up with that number, please?
Of course. The way we came up with that number is we've been working on these cases now for years, and we are very intimately familiar with all of the complaints that have been filed across the country at different state ag boards, with the EPA, with the Department of Agriculture. There have been over 5,000 complaints that have been filed with those various governmental entities. And from my experience in having done this for over 20 years, not everyone that has damage files a complaint with these boards. So we believe that 2,000 farmers is actually a conservative estimate of how many folks will come forward. I'm hopeful that anyone that has experienced dicamba damage comes forward and talks, consults with a lawyer. We think we're great lawyers. We are great lawyers. We're good at this. But you should talk to somebody if you have dicamba damage, because there has been a roadmap here, and there is compensation and justice available for farmers. We've also seen crop damage maps from 2017 that show over 3 million acres of damage. Why don't we have crop damage maps from 18 and 19? Because Monsanto is not putting those out. But for 17, we know over 3 million acres were damaged. That plus the 5,000 complaints to the governmental entities leads us to believe that there are lots and lots of farmers that have suffered as a result of Monsanto, Bayer, and BASF's behavior.
And at your firm, can you be specific about how many clients you're representing for dicamba damage and how many new clients you've gotten since the verdict?
It's a moving target, because we're fielding calls, you know, since the verdict came out. The way that this works, and it's this makes a lot of sense. Monsanto, as you heard, Hunter and Joe and Marty today, they're very powerful in the agricultural market. And so farmers are rightfully, I think, skeptical of lawyers. and it's difficult to take someone like Monsanto on. Once the verdict came out, it shows the farmers that this is not just going to be them taking on Monsanto, it's going to be the entire agricultural community taking on Monsanto. So before the verdict, we had somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 farmers. Since then, I really don't have an updated total because our phones have really been ringing off the hook. I just don't know how many contracts we have out, but we've been in contact with somewhere between 50 and 100 farmers.
Thank you.
Let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Lynn Bonner of the News and Observer. Please go ahead.
Thanks a lot. This is a question for Mr. Harper. Are you part of a lawsuit that has already been filed, and what percentage of your crop was damaged?
Okay. Yes, we have filed. We had three different farms that were destroyed, or one whole farm destroyed, tobacco field farm, mm-hmm. and then three mm-hmm. and two partials. And yes, ma'am, we haven't heard anything from any of it. And percentage wise, let's see, probably 10%. Or a little better.
Okay.
That was actually destroyed, but keep in mind now that's a majority of my profit for 2017. You know, on tobacco, so that hurt.
And I'm wondering if you reported it to the State Department of Agriculture and if they investigated.
Yes, ma'am. That was the first thing I did. Was called North Carolina Department of Agriculture, the pesticide section, and everybody. North Carolina's been here to see that tobacco that year. I mean, you know, all their different people and, you know, just different ones and county agents and agronomists and everybody. It was a big deal.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Bryce Gray of St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Please go ahead.
I suppose this is a question for the lawyers involved here. I guess, is there any speculation at this point about whether compensation, if in fact, you know, this is a roadmap to victory for your clients, like the Bader case, is there an expectation that punitive damages, I guess, could be as sizable as they were in the Bader case, which obviously is still under appeal, or, substantial in, some way, I suppose, beyond just compensation that farmers are able to demonstrate in their cases?
This is Joe Pfeiffer. I'll take that, and Paul can add something if you'd like. Yes, I would expect that punitive damages awards, like you've seen in the Bader case for dicamba at $250 million, and like you've seen against Monsanto for the Roundup cases of over $1 billion, they're meant to send a message to Monsanto that they're just not receiving, and the juries are getting that. You know, Monsanto continues to, you know, they come into court on Saturday when we had the punitive damages hearing, and they say that they learned their lesson. Then right after the jury returns a $250 million punitive verdict, they come out and say, we're going to appeal, and they got it all wrong. They have not learned their lesson, and until they learn their lesson, they're going to hear the lesson, or they're going to be taught the lesson by juries across this country.
Yeah, and this is Paul Lesko. If I could just add, I think the punitive damage element, I think it's available to other farmers out there because at the Bader trial, Monsanto did very little to challenge any of the internal emails or to counter any of the witnesses that the plaintiff called Monsanto witnesses itself to prove its case. And Monsanto put up very little of a defense towards those. So that says to me, you know, from that case, that the punitive damages are going to be at issue in every case that's available. And, you know, as shown by the Bader case, Monsanto has very little, if any, defense to that.
Thank you. Let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Jonathan Hegginger of the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting. Please go ahead. Jonathan Hegginger.
Hi, I just wanted to follow up on Bryce's question first because the punitive damages in the Bader case were for 2015 and 2016 for releasing the seed without an accompanying herbicide, and there weren't any punitive damages for 17 and 18, the way I understood it. Is, I guess, with Judge Limbaugh handling a lot of these cases and that ruling that punitive damages don't need to apply in 17 and 18, I guess, why do you think that would change in other cases?
Well, I think this is Paul Lesko again. Damages, yeah, you are correct. The punitive damages assessed in the Bader case were for 2015 and 2016. So, you know, right there, that sends the message for farmers that were damaged, that had dicamba damage in 2015 or 2016. You are, you know, potentially, you know, that roadmap to punitive damages is available to you. Now, the Bader case was the first case to go to trial. Discovery is still ongoing in for the MDL for all the other dicamba cases that are out there. We are getting additional materials, and you know, we believe that the Bader attorneys actually provided sufficient evidence for punitive damages for 2017 and beyond. So you know, that's, you know, as cases go on, more evidence is provided. You know, everybody changes their strategies going forwards from here, and we now know, you know, to the extent, you know, what we need to change, more focus there. But I, you know, from the evidence I saw, I thought there was sufficient evidence for a punitive damages award for 2017 and 2018, and, you know, we're only going to get stronger in that regard as discovery continues.
Okay, and then I just wanted to follow up, just see, have Hunter, Joe, and Marty, have they all filed lawsuits, or what is the case there?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
Are Hunter, Joe, and Marty, have you guys already filed lawsuits, or are you filing them now, or I guess kind of what is the status of those three?
Sure. So Hunter Tree Farms and Macklemore Farms, they are both part of the amended complaint that we filed in St. Louis. Marty Harper was not filed. He's a client that came to us later, and he will be, as the case progresses, he will be added into the case.
Thank you.
Great. Let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Carrie Gillum of The Guardian U.S. Rights Now. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this and putting this together. This is probably a question for one of the farmers, perhaps Marty Harper. You speak about partial damages, one field or more being totally destroyed and others that are partially destroyed. And I'm trying to understand what this means for crops like sweet potatoes and peanuts and others, for which there is no legal tolerance set for residues of dicamba. Are you concerned that you may be harvesting and taking to market crops that would contain residues of dicamba for which there are no legal tolerances? I understand that this is a problem that some farmers are very concerned about, like peach growers, watermelon, others.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. This is Marty Harper in North Carolina. Yes, ma'am. It was a big issue with tobacco because tobacco, like you say, we're selling the leaf. So they can you can see the damage very well, and really that was we were really in a big huge bind to start with because we didn't know if we had to destroy whole farms, but we had an agronomist come from R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, and he decided if there was the closer the tobacco fields were to the fields that were sprayed with dicamba, the more damage that was exhibited. And once you go across the fields away, you'll be less damaged. And so he flagged R.J. Reynolds would purchase, and the rest of it had to be destroyed. But we had one whole farm that the whole farm was damaged, and we had to destroy all of it.
Right, but I'm sorry, but what about things like sweet potatoes, which maybe haven't been totally destroyed, but they've been in the area. Would you presume that they might carry residues, and how do you deal with that?
Well, we haven't had any sweet potatoes damaged with dicamba. We did have peanuts that showed the damage from it, and of course they were underground crops, and it was just a little bit, just a small acreage, and went close to one of the tobacco fields. But
right.
But dicamba usually does not show up in a chemical analysis of the tobacco after a certain period. I mean, when we had the North Carolina Department of Agriculture Pesticide Section sent off samples, a lot of times they would come back non-detectable, but you can definitely tell it by looking at the plant. You know, it's deformed looking. But actual chemical analysis within the leaf itself, they don't detect. I think you could initially if you did it right after it was sprayed, but after a week or two, I don't think you can tell.
Yeah. And this is Paul Lesko, and you're right. The lack of a residual tolerance for dicamba is a concern for farmers because it is a potential threat that, you know, since the EPA has not been set a lower limit for how much can actually be there, that is a concern where you may survive the initial damage. Your crops may actually produce fruit. And then if later on they are tested and it comes out that you have any dicamba in it, well, that's a total loss for your crop as of now. So it is a very large concern for all farmers.
Yeah, that's what I'm being told, that there are farmers, that this is a very big concern, that even if your crop is not totally damaged, if it's found to be carrying the dicamba residues, because there's no legal tolerance, they're subject to seizure, and then there could be, you know, follow-up legal actions by consumers or large purchasers. So I'm just wondering how that's being handled by you guys, if it is.
Correct. And that was, especially during the Bader trial, the first witness was Steve Smith from Red Gold Tomatoes. And he explained that was a concern that he raised with Monsanto early on, well before these products were on the market, that without a residual tolerance in there, you know, crops like tomatoes or anything else where, you know, again, you survive the initial damage, but your actual crop shows, dicamba residue, it's a total loss for you. So, yes, that is a very big concern. And, we're not just looking at, you know, dicamba damage to the crops themselves, but anyone who has dicamba that shows up in the actual crop, that's another, avenue for, remedy in these cases.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Gil Gullickson of Successful Farming Magazine. Please go ahead.
Well, thanks so much for including us all on this call. This is one for the attorneys. You talked about 2017 and 2018 dicamba applications when the legal forms for the soybean tolerant action taken against other makers of these dicamba formulations, including Syngenta and Corteva AgriScience?
This is Paul Lesko. In our Smoky Alley complaint that was filed in 2017, we did name also DuPont. They provide the Fexapan product as a defendant. As the MDL is structured, though, the first claims that are going forward are the ones that are solely focused on BASF and Monsanto. Yes, at least at this point, DuPont is a named defendant in these cases. In some of these cases, in at least our cases.
Follow up. Why are you taking after the manufacturers instead of the applicators who actually applied these products?
This is Paul Lesko again. The reason we're going after the manufacturers is because, as the weed scientists across the country have said, this is a product defect case. You cannot, no matter what, if a farmer follows the instructions to the letter, does everything that they're supposed to, and gets the, Extendamax or Ingenia or Fexapan, applies it according to the label, there is a volatility risk where, after a legal application, overnight, the dicamba will volatilize, lift off the crops, and blow away. That is not an applicator error. That is not an applicator problem. That is a design defect. There is nothing you can do to train farmers to legally apply a product that does this. So that's why we're targeting solely the manufacturers, because it's the applicators here. Most farmers are trying to be good neighbors. They're trying to do everything they can to not damage their neighbors. And drift cases have happened for all of farming. And most times, if a drift case happens, the farmers get together and they fix it. But this is a unique situation, and it's caused a lot of tensions in the farming community, because you could follow the label, do everything that is correct, and still your neighbors are in a damage, and they're gonna suffer damage.
And let me just put that another way. This is Joe Pfeiffer. I mean, we view dicamba as sort of the Ford Pinto of pesticides. It's just unsafe at any speed. There's no way for the farmer to drive it safely or to apply it safely.
Okay, let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Jackie Faka of Feedstuff. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking our questions today. I guess I wanted to know if you can maybe explain the current cases that, one, you guys are a part of, and also, two, if there's a summary of how many different cases, and then also, two, are you looking to combine up with different firms, kind of a timeline of where these cases are as well throughout the process?
Sure. This is Joe Pfeiffer. Yes, we have talked with dozens of lawyers across the country that represent farmers, and we are teaming up with them in a number of cases. As far as what comes next, we'll have another trial. We're hopeful that trial happens sometime in the fall, by that time, I think there's going to be lots and lots and lots of cases filed. I'm not sure. There was a kind of a multi-part question there, so I'm not sure if I got to all of it, but I think that's the gist. If you want to ask a follow-up, I'm happy to go further.
Yeah, and I guess, too, you'd mentioned the 2,000 farmers. Are you looking to challenge different, soybean farmers together, or are you looking to target, several different courts around the country? I mean, from a strategy standpoint, do you guys have any idea of what you guys are looking to do moving forward?
Sure. For at this point, everything is consolidated in front of Judge Limbaugh in Missouri. But we are looking to represent anyone that has been damaged. As you heard on the call today, we had three different farmers with three different crops from three different areas of the country that have been damaged by this. And so we want to represent anyone, and we believe anyone that has been damaged by dicamba should seek representation and seek advice on how they can be compensated for this. I'll let Paul take anything else you have on the follow-up from procedure.
Sure. And this is Paul Lesko, and Joe explained everything. These cases were originally filed in multiple state courts. We filed in St. Louis. There were filings in Arkansas. There were filings in other states, Illinois and other states. All those cases were consolidated, and they are all in front of Judge Limbaugh right now for all discovery and pretrial matters. As the cases progress, we expect there to be more trials, probably some in Missouri. And, once other cases get ready for trial, they probably will be sent to other states as well.
Great. Operator, let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Steve Davies of AgriPulse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just to follow up on what you just said there, Paul. Did you say that state court cases have also been consolidated with Limbaugh? How is that possible?
No, filings in other states. There are state court cases that are filed. There's at least one state court case that I am aware of in Missouri that is still pending. Monsanto tried to bring it into the envelope by removing it to federal court, but that is a state case that is proceeding on its own separate track. There's at least one state filing that I'm aware of, but given that the damage has been across so many different states, and you have farmers from different states, and these companies are in different different states, that's why you're going to see more federal filings than anything, just because of the location of the defendants and the plaintiffs in these matters.
Okay. Kate, can I just follow up briefly? What are you doing to publicize this litigation and try to get the word out to farmers? Are you doing social media buys, TV ads, like with the Roundup cases, or what?
I think the most of this is Joe Pfeiffer. I mean, we're doing everything we can to get the word out, but I think the most effective thing that we've been able to do is talk to farmers themselves, talk to lawyers that know farmers, mm-hmm. and talk to their neighbors. This is something where the farmers, whoever they hire or whoever they talk to, they should trust them, and I want people to know the people that we talk to. So we're trying every way we can to get the word out, because as you heard from Hunter and Joe and Marty today, it's hard enough to be a farmer without having your crop destroyed by big chemical companies, and many farmers don't know or might be nervous about taking on Monsanto, and we're here to tell them that does not need to be the case.
Yeah, and this is Paul Westbrook, just to quickly follow up. You know, some of the most successful things that we have found, like Joe has said, is town hall meetings. And we've done a number of town hall meetings where we'll just get, you know, any farmers from the community that have questions, you know, from either side. And we recognize that, you know, there's, you know, a lot of people that want to, you know, learn about the science or the actual, you know, what is dicamba and what happens there. So we've set up a number of town hall meetings, and we plan on, we will have more in various states to educate farmers about, you know, not only the issues that are here, but, you know, what potential rights that they have.
And let me put it this way. I've been in my car or on the phone for the past couple of weeks trying to get the word out and meeting with farmers and lawyers across the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, operator, let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Jay Woltz of Southeast Missourian. Please go ahead.
Yes, Jay Woltz, Southeast Missourian newspaper. I'm here in Cape Girardeau, so the trial was like in my backyard. First off, thanks for taking that question. During the trial here in Cape, I got a sense that a large number of the complaints have originated in the Southeast Missouri, Northeast Arkansas region, as well as Southern Illinois and portions of West Kentucky and Tennessee. So I'm interested in localizing the story as much as possible. Can you give me a sense of how many cases, not exact numbers, are coming from this region that you're dealing with? And my follow-up also is I'm wondering if the cases can be consolidated into some sort of a class action litigation, or is there a potential of a blanket settlement, for instance?
Sure. And this is Paul Lesko. And you're right. The, you know, and at the Bader trial, you know, documents were shown that, you know, the boot heel of Missouri and northern Arkansas was kind of ground zero for, you know, dicamba exposure. That's because the conditions there are perfect for volatility. If you have hot days, you know, that's, you know, once it's applied, heat is going to allow for volatility. So obviously the places where it's warmer, you're going to have more volatility. Volatility, and that's, you know, the boot heel is known for warm summers, hot summers. As for class action, so once the cases were consolidated in front of Judge Limbaugh, we are, you know, proceeding as a putative class action. We would, you know, like for this case to proceed as a class action. Now, only a judge gets to determine whether it's going to be a class action or not. So we're at that point of the case where we will, going forward, it will be decided whether this will be a class action or not. And regardless if it's a class action or not, or an individual case like the Bader Farms case was an individual case, you know, there's a lot of risk for Monsanto and BASF in this matter.
And let me just follow up on that. We think that at this point, now is the time, whether this proceeds as a class action or as individual actions, for farmers and their families to reach out to someone to get some advice on what to do with this. And as far as the boot heel and the places you mentioned, you know, it's sort of like the contravirus. You know, it starts there, that's where it was first discovered, and that was the initial hot spot, and now it's spreading throughout the country. As this becomes more and more prevalent.
Just as a quick follow-up, it's safe to say, though, that a number of the cases that you're dealing with are coming from the Southeast Missouri area right now. They are currently active.
Let's put it this way. There's no shortage of cases coming out of there. That is for sure. But as you heard today, they're all over the place.
Right, and this is Paul Lesko. I think of our original Smoky Alley complaint that was filed, I think it was easily 80% of our clients came from the boot heel region in northern Arkansas.
Great, thanks.
Okay, operator, let's proceed to our next question, please.
The next question comes from Emily Unglesby of ETN, the Progressive Farmer. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My question is for the lawyers. That Bader case that you're referencing was filed for damage dating back to 4 years ago. At this point, it took years to wind its way through the legal system and come to a ruling. Do you anticipate cases continuing to move that slowly, or will they speed up with this precedent? Will we still be seeing dicamba cases 4 to 5 years from now? How far out do you think this will go?
Well, yeah, this is Paul Lesko.
This is Joe Pfeiffer. Go ahead. Let me call Paul, and then go ahead. I think we're very hopeful that this verdict speeds up the process. The wheels of justice grind slowly but finely. And it really kind of is up to Monsanto when they want to come to the table and stop killing farmers in their crops. When they're ready to resolve this, then we'll resolve it. If we have to continue to try these cases and win time after time after time after time, that's what we'll do. But it's in a typical case with a typical defendant, this would end up moving a lot faster. And now we've done a lot of the spade work necessary on the science and on the internal documents from Monsanto and BASF that we really do have a firm handle on how to try these cases. And so the trial should be coming quicker and quicker.
Yeah, and this is Paul Lesko, and that's correct. Most of the what's originally slow in cases like this is the initial discovery, and now that Bader is gone to trial, discovery is still open, but most of the discovery, or quite a bit of the discovery, has already been completed. So we expect cases going to trial will proceed a lot more quickly. But as to the other part of your question about will we be seeing additional cases, dicamba cases. I think that's yes. We're getting new clients every day from post the beta trial, but also these products are still on the market. I mean, that's something that I think really needs to be explored. That the defendants now, the manufacturers here, know there's a risk and they're still putting out this product. And it's not like damages is just going to disappear. I mean, sure, they're selling more soybean seed and they're selling more cotton seed, and pretty soon they'll be selling corn seed that's resistant to it. But lots of other crops are not resistant, and they're not going to ever have 100% of these markets. So the more seed that's out there, the more spraying that's going to happen, the more damage that's going to result. So this is not an issue that's going to disappear this year. It's going to continue for as long as this product's available on the market and as long as they don't fix it and make it non-volatile.
Thank you.
Okay. Operator, let's proceed to our next question, please.
The next question is from Lynn Henderson of Agri Marketing Magazine. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. This is all very interesting. Crop damage from chemicals is really nothing new. And in fact, what has developed over the years is the companies settle. So I've got a question for the farmers. Did the companies try to settle with you?
This is Joe McLemore. They've not ever tried to settle with me. In fact, quite the opposite. They've come and point fingers everywhere else, but they've never admitted anything. No.
Yeah, and this is Paul Lesko. Just really quickly, there were documents shown at the Bader trial that it was BASF and Monsanto's philosophy to never settle. So cases where manufacturers would settle, I'd put to you there aren't any.
Yeah, this is Hunter with Hunter Tree Farms. Yeah, they haven't reached out at all. We believe we offered them to come out and look at our results, our findings, and they actually have not even contacted us or interested at all. So no.
This is Marty Harper in North Carolina. I had BASF. Was one their product did one tobacco farm, and another farm was Monsanto, and like you just heard that their policy is that it does not drift, it does not volatilize, and they're not liable. And so that was the end of that. And I haven't heard any. They would not ever return my calls after the initial visit.
Yeah, and I think Joe McLemore raised a really good point, and it actually happened during one of his field inspections. Joe has suffered through multiple field inspections with all the defendants, and during the field inspections, one of the defendants who was inspecting the field said, "Oh, this is obviously due to applicator error." And, ignoring that it was uniform damage from end to end, that it was obviously caused by volatility. And, right there, Joe McLemore gets on the phone with his applicator and says, well, this, like you to know that BASF says that you're the cause of all my problems. And, I mean, that's the type of, response and, frankly, arrogance that we're seeing here. And, one thing I don't think is, thought about enough is that Monsanto and BASF, when they're not blaming their own products, there's only one thing that they can blame, and that's their customers. These products are being applied over the top of Xtend seed. It's the only seed that's resistant to dicamba. So when farmers are applying this and it results in damage to others' fields, Monsanto and BASF's defense is basically our customers.
And let me just, this is Joe Pfeiffer. Let me just say that, you know, you're right that a lot of these, you know, drift cases and crop damage cases have settled. And we feel like if not before the beta verdict, certainly by the beta verdict, we've led the Monsanto and BASF horse to the water. If they don't want to drink, that's up to them. But we intend to put that horse's mouth underwater until it either drinks or drowns and gets justice for these farmers.
And as a follow-up, when these problems first started pop up, and I'm thinking about specifically soybeans, the companies said that there was no yield damage. It was all cosmetic. Is that still the case?
This is Paul Lesko. That is, as I understand it, that is Monsanto's defense. That's basically, we're not ruining your yield. We're just making your crops really ugly. But as was pointed out today with, we disagree with that premise. If there's symptomology, there's going to be yield loss. But that doesn't apply to all crops, especially when we're talking about, you know, hunter tree farms. Their business is aesthetics of trees. If you have ugly trees, you cannot sell ugly trees.
And tobacco, and et cetera. Yeah, go ahead.
This is Hunter Winkowski here, and he's absolutely right. Images are everything for our business. You know, the when you market, I need all those images for those perfect trees. And if you look at our images from our first crop that wasn't hit by dicamba, you can see the lead up that we had, and then it just stops. There's no more pictures. Our Facebook, our Instagram, you can just see it stops because you can't put pictures like that out there.
And while they may continue to be their defense, and who knows what they'll come up with next or what they're going to say, that defense has obviously been roundly rejected by the Missouri jury. And we expect juries in the future to do the same.
This is Joe McLemore. Originally, their defense was that it wasn't even dicamba damage. And then, you know, they've changed that to there's no yield loss. You know, every time they've been made to accept the truth, they just change their position.
This is Hunter again. I had actually spoke with the farmer adjacent to me, and he came out and looked at my farm and said, I apologize. He didn't just ruin my field. My crops are a little bit higher square foot, you know, per square foot. But my neighbor, all his soybeans were. I've got pictures of them. All the leaves are wrinkled, and the dyers had admitted to, you know, hey, this that I won't spray it. And since then, they haven't sprayed it, and I haven't seen the issue. So, Monsanto is the common denominator. So.
Okay, let's go to our next question, please.
The next question is from Melinda Hemmelgarn of Food Sleuth. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am both a registered dietitian and a print and radio journalist. So much like Paul Lesko, I have a unique view of this issue, and that is that it's not just the farmers who are losing out from this incident, it's also consumers. So all of the consumers who would have been eating Bader's peaches as a way to prevent chronic disease are also missing out. Has there been any effort to do a class action lawsuit that includes combining consumers with farmers?
Thus far, we have not done that. But we've been concentrating on the farmers who have had who've been on the front lines of the damage that has happened here. But yes, you're correct. The consumers ultimately are harmed by this, and folks with organic farms. If you have an organic farm and dicamba drifts onto your fields have to lie fallow for years before you can get recertified as organic. And so then again, as you said, the consumers are losing out, but the farmers themselves have to sit there with empty fields, nothing to do for years and years until the dicamba finally gets off their fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are trillions of dollars.
And I don't have any doubt that consumers are next, you know, that something like that's coming.
I would hope so. Let me just do a follow-up real quick about Carrie Gillum's question. It's my understanding that dicamba is a systemic herbicide, so that we really should expect there to be presence of that herbicide in all parts of the plant, edible portions as well, even if they're underground.
Well, Paul, you're the science man.
This is Paul Lesko. This is Paul Lesko, and you know, we are exploring. You know, ultimately, if anybody's harmed from dicamba, we are looking at cases in those regards. And you know, I drive from St. Louis to Chicago, and during the spring and summer, especially of 2017, I couldn't. I play this annoying game with my wife where I would point out, "Hey, look, there's a sick sycamore tree. I bet there's a soybean field nearby." And every time you'd see a sick sycamore tree, there would be a soybean field nearby. So that is another concern I would share with you, is the fact that, you know, during, you know, the hot summers when there's a lot of dicamba being sprayed and it's a lot of volatility, it's a pervasive herbicide that's potentially everywhere, and it's potentially on lots of different crops. So people who are trying to eat clean and would like to eat foods that are not contaminated with dicamba, if the testing does start on that and it does start showing up in more crops, I think it's a very viable concern, and it wouldn't shock me if that's another round of lawsuits that could be happening.
Good. Thanks.
Great. Operator, do we have any more questions at this time?
There are no other questions.
Okay. Well, good timing, because we're getting close to the top of the hour. We do want to make sure you know where to get more information about today's news event if needed. As a reminder, an audio recording will be available online later today. It will be at dicambadrift.com. And if you need more information, or if you need to connect with any of the speakers you're hearing from, just give a call to Max Carlin, 703-276-3255. We do thank you for joining this news event, sponsored by Piper Wolf, Carr & Kane, and that concludes today's news event. Thank you.